one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So one of the things I noticed from trying to listen to the audio recording that John Allen sent is much better if you're speaking somewhere near a microphone. Otherwise, it's horrible to listen to.
Yes, it is. I didn't even listen to the microphone.
How much time do I have?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. So I have to really talk super fast. Okay? All right. Highlights of the booklet. Did you have any questions? Because I know some materials went over to you ahead of time. Did the board get a chance to look at those materials?
I reviewed the document that you sent over. I don't have any questions.
All right. So I'll give you the highlights. Okay. So within the packet that you have right now, there are 6 documents. The first, behind tab 1, is the financial statement. So that's the culmination of the external audit. When you go to tab 1, behind the table of contents, most important part of the document, in our opinion, is the independent auditor's report. You want to know whether or not we think the financial records fairly state the condition of the school district. And so our opinion is an unmodified opinion. And just as a reminder, an unmodified opinion means when we examine the books and records, we think they fairly state the operations of the school district during the year and what's on the balance sheet as of June 30th, 2014. Okay. And there's many paragraphs within that auditor's report because in addition to the financial statements that we're required to present, this supplementary information that's required under generally accepted auditing standards, okay, and the supplementary information that's required by the state. When you get the opportunity to look at the document in a little bit more detail, I'll just go through the main pieces. Page 3 starts management's discussion and analysis, which is supposedly the friendly part of the document, which gives you some summary information on the financial statements. I think the important aspect of the financial statements as far as the numbers are concerned are the financial highlights. How did the district do during the year? Okay, and we know that things are very tight as far as the tax cap is concerned. We know that things are tight as far as where you are from budget to budget, okay? And we know that there's some mandated expenses that you have to provide for. So the district did well. Where would you see that? If you looked at bullet number 4 on page 3, we look at the total fund balance. And the total fund balance is what the district has as a result of concluding their operating results for the year. It's cumulative since the first day that the district was in business. And this shows you on bullet 4 that the total general fund increased about $240,000. So what does that mean? You had revenues in excess of expenditures, okay? And that's a good thing. You had some additional state aid that you hadn't budgeted for, or it came in at a level that's better than what you had budgeted for, okay, which is a better way to explain it. So that's a good thing. And you always watch your spending, okay? So you're never spending your entire budget, which is not what you should be doing, because you need to be in a position to be able to appropriate some money towards next year's tax levy. And you've been able to do that. So basically, when I look at your financial statement, the savings from not spending your budget is what you gave towards the next year's tax levy to reduce that. And that's on a rolling basis. That's something that that you want to look at being able to continue to do. The next bullet after that talks about the unassigned fund balance. So we know according to real property tax law, school districts cannot maintain more than 4% of next year's budget in the unassigned fund balance. Okay, this is the money that's the emergency money that's available if something happens. And the district was within the 4%, which is a good thing. Okay. The last bullet on the financial.
Do you know, or does Carol know where exactly we are?
We're right at 4 now.
Right at 4.
Right. Yeah. It's 3.99 is really what
so
it
right
is.
There.
Okay.
We want it to be here.
Yeah. Okay. Which is the place that you want to be. You know, in years past, the state let you go up to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer the case. Okay. It's been as low as 2%.
Yeah, but I think does down, then we put it back up.
Right, which is really important. Mm-hmm. You want to do that. You also want to keep your reserves at the level that they are, because you do have some expenses that you need to deal with. This past year was a perfect example. You had people separate from the district. You needed to take money out of the employee benefit accrued liability reserve. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have that, you would have to find $90,000 within your budget that you hadn't budgeted for.
Wouldn't it be great if we could be fully funded and have something?
Yes, it would be. The last bullet on this page talks about your bond rating. So it's really important because even though the interest rates are relatively low, when you have a good financial statement, which is what Santa Maricha's has, and you have fund balance that supports where you are right now and where you need to be prospectively, you get rated, okay, by the agencies. And you now have you have a bond rating right now of AA3, okay, so it's higher than what you had before, okay. And one of the other reasons why it's higher is because it's a new program that the state put in place that actually says that if a school district's not able to go ahead and support the debt service, the state will step in and they'll take whatever's been appropriated for state aid for a school district and pay the holders of the bond with that money, okay?
So the higher our rating, the cheaper it is to borrow on the TAN notes, and also if we issue a bond.
Right, and we'll see that. We can look at that when we look at the financial statement. So that's really important.
What's the highest rating that you can have?
Okay. So you're pretty much at the top right now, okay? That's the highest rating that you can have, okay, for the most part.
And what are they looking at in the district? Is it really your levy compared to your expenses? Is that really it?
No, it's the accumulation of your fund balance. So I'm going to take you to a page that gives you a summary of the question that you're asking. Mm-hmm. So let's go to page 9 in management's discussion and analysis. So the top section of this is your fund balance, okay? And the fund balance, as I mentioned before, is accumulation from day one, okay? And if you look at the general fund, you could see that there's a number in the first column of $5.8 million versus $5.6 million. Mm-hmm. And remember when we looked at management's discussion analysis, we saw a change of 240. That's where the 240 is, okay? The change in the 240, 128 of it is in the unassigned fund balance. So you were able to build up a little bit more to get to the 4%, 3.99%. The other change has to do with what you actually have in your reserves or restricted fund balances. So you have four reserves, as you could see, unemployment, retirement contribution, liability, and the employee benefit accrued liability. And what you've done during this year, because you had favorable savings on your budget, you put some money back into the employee benefit accrued liability reserve, the 90 that you took out, plus a little bit more, you put 400 in. You put about $400,000 into the retirement contribution reserve plus the interest. And that's a good way to look at funding the reserve so that when it comes time for supporting your budget in these areas that are going to be more costly, you don't need to raise taxes, okay? You appropriate the reserves, understanding that, okay, we think it's going to be a year where the retirement system rate for the employee's retirement system is going to go back up again from 20% and change up to 25%, and that's not going to happen, but let's just say that that happened. You as a board now can say to the administration, we want to appropriate money out of this reserve. We don't want to raise taxes for it. So this is a really good thing to do out of the savings that you have. And to the extent that you have savings on your salary lines and you look to put that in salaries and benefits and you look to put that back into the employee benefit accrued liability, you have an obligation under the contracts that you have in place right now. If everyone was to separate from the district as of June 30th, this $2.5 million. Now, we know that that's not going to happen, of exposure that the district has for payouts based upon days that have banked. You have $900,000 in that reserve. That's what that reserve is for. As people separate from the district to the extent that it's unexpected, and it's always going to be unexpected for the most part, you can utilize that money. So I think you've done a really good job of putting forth a budget that was meaningful and at the same time accumulating reserve balances, because it's what the state wants to see also. The state's very concerned about districts being in fiscal stress. Okay, they've done a whole study. They've commented on some school districts that they're concerned about, since Merches is not one of them. But they look at the fact as, what do you have in your unassigned fund balance? What do you have in your reserves? How are you going to be able to perpetuate yourself over a five-year period of time with the tax cap in place? So you've positioned yourself to be able to make some decisions to be able to deliver the programs that you want. So I think that's the important part of the financial. Financial has many different pieces after management's discussion and analysis. There's the basic financial statements. There's two ways that the financial statements are presented, starting on page 14 and then on 15. There are accrual basis financial statements. These are all our receivables as to what we expect to collect, all our assets capitalized, all our debt, whether it's due now or out of the current year's operating budget that we're living in right now or out of prospective years. That's all identified here. As compared to page 16, which is a balance sheet that's on the modified accrual basis. And the modified accrual basis is the way that the school districts reports their information to the State Education Department. Major difference being, if I have to pay debt service because you have bonds, I report that as an expense on my modified accrual basis financial statements, the way the district maintains their books. Whereas if I have debt on the accrual basis and I pay that debt down, it's just a reduction of a liability. Other major differences, anytime I purchase a fixed asset or I do work around the school district, on the financial statements maintained by the school district, which is the balance sheet and the statement of revenues and expenditures, any money I outlay for capital is an expense. on the accrual basis financial statements, any money I outlay for capital, just like in the commercial world, it's a fixed asset subject to depreciation. So those are the two major differences in the way things are reported. And there's a reconciliation back on pages 17 and 19, which takes you from the balances on the modified accrual basis financial statements to the accrual basis financial statements. Okay. On page 20, the district has some agency funds, and the district also has a small scholarship fund. So 20 gives you a statement of net position for those funds, and then 21 tells you about the changes in the scholarship fund. There are some disclosures which start on page 22, which give you some additional information, and they run all the way through 41, okay, on the numbers in the financial statement. One of the things that's different that I just wanted to bring to your attention is on page 37. Okay. Because of the increase in the retirement system rates between the 2 years, we might remember for the teacher's retirement system, which is the first column in the table under item C, the teacher's retirement system rate went from 11.84% in 2013 up to 16.25% in 2014. It will be going up to 17.53% in 15. Okay, you could see the big change in the numbers. Okay, so from a funding perspective, just to kind of get a sense as to where you're going there. The retirement system through the state for the employees, they offer the pension stabilization option, and the district took that option. Okay, so I just want to be very clear with the presentation that it's not that in 2014 you contributed less. You are paying an altered, what's known as an altered contribution to the state. And so you paid $454, and there's another, if you look at item D, under the pension stabilization law, there's another $283,000, which the state gave school districts the opportunity to spread out over 12 years with an interest rate of 3.76%. It's pegged to the Treasury rates, okay? And so that provision will call for $29,000 worth of funds to be required to pay this year's contribution over the next 12 years. At any given time, if you decide that you don't want to be under that option for pension stabilization, you can make a lump sum payment. Okay, so it's something to consider going forward. Okay. So that's different. Page 38, other post-employment benefits. We've talked a little bit about this. This is health insurance for retirees. We know we can't fund for it. The state will not let us fund for it. We know that the district provides for within their budget the cost for retirees' health insurance. So if you look at the table on page 38, there's an actuary study that's performed, and there are some numbers that are derived, and the numbers that are derived then are amortized over a 30-year period of time to let districts know if you could fund, this is the amount of money that you should set aside. Where would you find that number? If you look at the annual OPEB cost on that table, $2.5 million would be the annual funding that you would need for retirees currently in existence, and all those current employees working for the district who will retire, okay? You currently set aside through your budget and you pay out $952,000. So you're underfunded by $1.5 million. And just to repeat myself, you cannot fund for it, but you're required to present what that underfunding is. Cumulatively, up through this period of time, it's $9.4 million. You would see that on your statement of net assets when you look back at that, okay? And there's a schedule underneath that table that talks about the annual cost as it relates to the ultimate liability. So I wanted to point to your attention to that number. The rest of, you had asked the question.
Because the funding amounts are standard across the board, meaning you have to, you know, each district has to fund or take the option to defer. The underfunded amount is consistent district to district to district. That's not something that's specialized to this district, correct?
On the health insurance, going to be specialized because each district has different contracts for their employees, which talk about what the employer will contribute, what the district will contribute. And then there's different health plans that are out there that you're responsible for paying X amount of money. So it depends from contract to contract and district to district. It's going to be a different number. But it will always be.
The
I think this
concept,
is your question.
Yeah.
It's always unfunded.
Right.
And I think this is your question. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. You had asked about the rates. So if you look at page 34, you borrow on a temporary basis until you get the tax money in. You could see what having a good financial position does for you. Your short-term borrowing rate is 0.47%, okay, which is great, okay, just to kind of put that in terms of where you are. Okay. Behind, moving to the next, when you get the chance, you might want to look at 42 and 43, which give you some budget to actual numbers. And as I mentioned before, some of the favorable results are due to the additional state aid that you got during the year. When you look at this schedule, you could see state aid came in at $700,000 more than had been anticipated, which is a great thing.
Which line are you on 42?
Yes, I was going to say the same thing.
State sources. Right in the middle of the schedule. So like
700,000 more, 715.
Right.
Got it.
So that's the variance. The variance is off to the right.
Yep,
so that's your big positive variance, okay? On page 43, it's the same layout. What did you think you were going to spend? What did you actually spend? What do you have in open encumbrances, which reduce the appropriations? And what do you have in terms of favorable variances? So you could see down at the bottom right corner, that was your favorable variance for the spending part of the budget overall. The areas that were favorable were employee benefits. Health insurance rates didn't grow as much as most districts had expected, so most districts have a pickup in that particular area. And then within the instructional area, the pickup is in programs for students with disabilities, which is very hard to guesstimate what that amount might be because you don't know what the placements are going to be. And in the instructional area, okay, teaching regular school.
So just so I understand, if you come down to the bottom right number, 1.6 on page 43,
mm-hmm.
that's the variance from budget to actual.
That's correct.
So 1.6 less, which ties back to the fund balance that was attributed.
Correct.
What was it last year, do you remember?
Well, and that's a good point. And what you might want to do, and I skipped past this, but that's a good, where you could really see a really good reconciliation of that is on page 10. So you start with your opening fund balance. Okay, which was $1,488,000 in round numbers. You see the pickup on the revenue side of the budget, which is what you're talking about. You see the pickup on the expenditure side of the budget. You see that the changes in the reserves, and there's information on this on page 11, you placed $400,000 into the retirement contribution reserve. You placed $400,000 into the employee benefit accrued liability reserve. That's a reduction of your aggregate 1.6 that you picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a piece that's assigned to the non-spendable, which has to do with prepaid. You returned $1,004,000 to the taxpayers to reduce the levy, and you closed with $1,006,000.
Right.
And I think that's what you were asking. So that's pretty much the accumulation of what the unrestricted or the unassigned fund balance is.
Okay.
Behind tab 2, we did perform the federal single audit because the district did receive more than $500,000 in funding and expenditures. So there's a schedule on page 1 behind tab 2 of what the grants are and the amount of expenditures. This year, under the Federal Single Audit Act, we audited the special education cluster, okay, and we're looking for compliance with laws and regulations to make sure that the monies were expended in the way that the grants were fashioned, and proper reporting to the state, which is the monies are passed through from the federal government to the state. We had no findings, and you'll see on page 3 there were no prior findings. We have no findings this year. And so we think that you have a good set of controls in place to make sure that you comply with the federal regulations as to how you should spend the money. Okay. Behind tab 3, there's a report on the extra classroom activity funds. These are really not funds that are operated by the business office, but rather by the students and fiscal advisors on behalf of the students. It's a cash basis report, and so that's a little bit different than the way the other financial statements are rendered, and it's the way that the State Education Department says we should report the transactions. Page 3 of that report gives you a reconciliation of the opening cash balance by club or activity, what was collected, what was dispersed, and what the ending cash balances are by club or activity. We actually audit the transactions. We pull a sample based upon the population. And we had some comments in the management letter, which, you know, I'll talk about in a couple minutes. Tab 4 is the management letter, and I really wanted to compliment the business office, Carol especially, on the size of the management letter. The approach in taking last year's management letter comments and saying, okay, this is a good way to address it. Looking at the prior year's comments, the budget transfer comment, the district put some controls in place with respect to that, computer controls, that comment also. In the extra classroom activity funds, Two of the four prior years' comments have been fixed. The two that the clubs need to really get involved in has to do with student and treasurer's signatures on the forms, which is really outside of the business office, and really looking at preparing profit and loss statements so that those can be reconciled to the books and records. At the top of page 3, this is a good problem to have. Your school lunch fund has a surplus, so it gives you the ability to do whatever you need to do. Unfortunately, the federal government says that you should only have $132,000 of fund balance in your school lunch fund. You know, you're in a good situation. It's very difficult for schools to maintain their school lunch fund and not look at support from the general fund. You're currently at $222,000, so, and you continue to show operating surplus, which is a very good thing. It gives you the ability to do what you need to do.
Do we have to do anything to pull that down to the 130?
Well, what the federal government just wants to know is that you have a plan in place. Are you going to be looking at buying equipment? Are you going to be looking at changing up something with respect to the way that you maybe produce the food for the students? If it continued to grow and there was no plan, then they might be concerned about that. But they've never changed their reimbursements to school districts based upon them having, and that's a good question, upon having an amount in there that's more than 3 months' worth of expenditures. You haven't seen that so far.
Thank you.
Vending machines, the district's good with this. With the current vending company, they get reports that they can reconcile. Written employment agreement, this is a personnel-related one that there's been a practice for the district whereby certain people get paid based upon what may be constituted to be a full day at a certain amount of pay. And we're just suggesting that that practice be committed to writing and ratified by the Board of Education. And we're not talking about a very large number, and we're not talking about transactions that appear to be problematic. It's just, as the auditor, if we don't have something to audit to, it makes it very difficult. But the transactions do seem reasonable. Our only comment for this year has to do with the fixed assets. And basically what happens is because we're looking at existence of fixed assets, we're looking to see on a periodic basis if there's something that's purchased, is it tagged when it comes into the district? Does that tag number match up with what's in the inventory record that's produced by the outside fixed asset inventory company? And there were some situations where the tag numbers did not match up, okay? And there were some items did not have tags on them. So it's a matter of maybe doing an internal site-by-site inventory and figuring out what needs to be tagged and updating that fixed asset inventory record. It does not look like it's pervasive. It was, you know, on a sample of 20 that we looked at. Okay, it was maybe 3 or 4, but nevertheless, I work for the Board of Education, so I communicate to you that I find.
Does that mean like computers that are issued have some type of tag to track?
Yep, the computers are great. As a matter of fact, you know, and that's what you should take comfort in. The things that could walk away are tagged. They make sense as far as a fixed asset. This was a table. There were a couple of chairs.
Like a bookcase or
things like stuff, that someone could not walk out the door, nor would want to walk out the door with. So you should feel comfortable about that. The behind tab 5, there's a communication to the Board of Education. If we had any difficulties when we performed the audit, if there were any journal entries that management decided that they did not want to post, that was not the case. We have no disagreements. And what we do at the conclusion of this document is we give to you the journal entries that we propose for the district to post in their books and records. And you can see pages 1 through 3. And just so you know, to put them in perspective, these, other than journal entry 1 and 2, the rest of these entries on here are for the conversion of the financial statements from the modified accrual basis, which is the way the district keeps their books and records, to the accrual basis. Because I don't want you to think that we're coming in and we're posting a lot of adjustments. No, we're converting the books from one set to another set under the accounting standards. So I think the district's done a good job with that. On page 6, because pictures work for me oftentimes, I give you a graph, and you know we'll continue to look at this as we go forward because stability is really important and you worked very hard. I remember a number of years ago where you didn't have unassigned fund balance. We could go back years ago and you were not fiscally sound like you are now. And so what this graph shows you, the red bar is what you're spending in the general fund, which mirrors your operating budget that you put forth, and what are the revenue streams? What's the revenue stream as far as what you recognized? And so you could see for this year that just passed, you're pretty much matching up your revenue stream with your expenditures, which is a good thing. 2013, you expended more than what you had collected. 2012, you created some surplus, and because you created the surplus, if you think about it, you were in a position to return more of appropriated fund balance to reduce the tax levy. But now you're in a place where you're running pretty much even, Stephen, okay? So if you're returning $1.4 million to reduce the tax levy and you're appropriating some of your reserves and things stay about the same, the expectation would be is that you would be at that same level perspective.
Is that typical for districts that what they appropriate, and I know you're going to say that it depends on the district and the financial stability of that district, but what you appropriate, you return? So that there's kind of that annual roll of that same chunk of money so that you have a surplus, but that it goes back?
A lot of districts will look at that as, let's appropriate, if we have a surplus during the year, let's appropriate something, okay? And it could be a fairly decent number to reduce the tax levy, but let's look at what we need to put into the reserves also, okay? I think it's a combination approach. And I think for you, for 14-15, it looks like your state aid is going to be favorable. Without that favorable state aid for the 14-15 budget, you might have had to appropriate more money, okay? That's one of the other reasons why you did not appropriate as much as you did. But if that $800,000 in state aid does not materialize in a subsequent year and you want to keep things at the, on a level field, then you're going to need to look at appropriating more. Now, the rule of thumb is if you're retaining 4% in your unassigned fund balance, you would not want to be in a situation that you're appropriating more than what you're retaining. It's not a good place to be because you have to be able to create through budgetary savings that amount of money.
Because then at some point you
right,
over
absolutely
zero.
Right. And with the tax cap being what it is, we know 1.5% does not give you the ability to grow that levy. And I'm not saying you should grow that levy, but necessarily enough to take care of what the growth in your mandated costs are and your contractual obligation. So I think you're in a really good place right now. And that's pretty much my presentation.
Thank you very much. Anybody have any questions?
Jill, your professional opinion, where do you see the TRS and ERS percents going? It went from 11, 16 and change, now 17 and a half. Where are we going?
I'm not sure.
And I won't hold you to it, I promise.
No, you know what? And it's interesting because I think back on those years when ERS had no rate for 2 years, okay? And the stock market's doing great. So here's the thing. They're pegging the ERS rate 3 years back based upon what the financial results are, okay? That's okay, but we know that if things are, you know, creeping along the way that they're creeping along, then the rate for the ERS is going to stay at 20% or thereabouts. It's not going to get any better, okay? TRS is an interest, and you know what? ERS, the actuary of ERS says that the system's doing really well. As a matter of fact, when we get to reporting on the 15 financial statement, your share of either the liability or the asset, districts and municipalities may be showing a net asset. And we scratch our head and say, how could that be? You're asking for 20% contribution, and that's not falling off. TRS is a whole other story because they continue to have the rate climb. Okay? And even with creating the new tiers, there hasn't really, with 5 and 6, there really hasn't been the ability, because of the number of people that are retiring, to be able to say, we're looking prospectively at any reduction in the rate. So I don't know if that answers your question, because the stock market's
a question. It wasn't what I wanted to hear, but it does answer my question.
You know, there's bulletins that they put out periodically that we look at, but honestly, without knowing what the stock market's going to do and without looking at census information as to who's retiring and what the payouts are, it's really difficult to really imagine that the rates are going to go down. I just don't see it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry about that bad news.
That's okay. Pat, we are already in public. If you can just come up, we're going to keep continue on.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you,
I appreciate it.
Sorry,
thank
you.
You.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. We are in public session. We did say the Pledge of Allegiance. I just want to, so we're going to jump down to questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda only. So you have a question or comment. The only thing that we ask, I see a lot of new faces today. Just please remember to just state your name so we can actually call you by name. And if you could come up to the podium, we are trying to tape our board meetings for people that are unable to come. So we'd appreciate if you would speak into the mic for the people that can't come this evening. This way they can listen to it later on. So are there any questions or comments? Kathy Rasso would like to have a question. No?
You can just come up. Oh, you don't have a copy of the agenda?
Oh, geez, thank you. Thank you. Here we go. Mr. Allen will distribute them, so thank you. I appreciate that, Kathy.
Are our mics on, John? Or no?
Yes.
Okay.
I hope I've been talking into it.
I heard it.
Okay.
So now that everybody's got it, if anybody's got a question. Questions?
Do you want to ask for a motion to adopt the minutes?
Motion to adopt the minutes of the regular meeting on September 3rd, 2014.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education rescinds its August 20th, 2014 actions as follows.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education accepts the following name change.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education appoints the following individuals as substitutes for the 2014-2015 school year as follows.
Motion.
Motion.
Motion. Sorry, Josh.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
The district recently advertised for candidates to fill various teacher and staff support vacancies for 2014-2015. Candidates were interviewed by committees, building principals, and/or the superintendent. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the following appointments.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the following contracts in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contracts, as well as at the established cost contained in said contract.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the budget transfers.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion.
Did you have any questions on that?
No, I didn't actually. It was all pretty standard.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the Student Activity Treasurer's Report for the middle school and high school for the month of June 2014.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Did we skip the Treasurer's Report?
Yeah,
we
skipped it.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was.
Yeah.
Oh.
I read that as she was
I'm
reading.
Sorry. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education approves the Treasurer's Report for the month of June 2014.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes. Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education accepts the 2013-2014 Independent Auditor's Reports.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Is that the only thing we needed to get the word draft removed from this? Just for us to approve it? I meant to ask Jill that question because you know, what
they'll,
she gave us says draft.
They'll now turn it into a final.
Correct. Thank you.
And you'll receive a final report.
Motion carries unanimously.
The Board of Education has appointed an independent claims auditor to review bills and authorize the processing of payment during the period between Board of Education meetings. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the report by the independent claims auditor for the month of August 2014 and authorizes payment of the monthly bills listed on warrants for the month of August 2014 as audited by the independent claims auditor as follows.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education appoints the disposition of books and equipment.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the following donation.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. So that's the first one. No, that's not the second one. So go to the
recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the following donations from the Parent Teachers Association, PTA.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Motion carries unanimously. We want to really express, I don't know, you know, what members of the PTA are here, but Mrs. Rank and
she texted me before we started and she just said thank you. She wanted me to just express it. She couldn't make it, but she appreciates.
Yeah. The help is phenomenal and we really appreciate, you know, everything that the PTA does and everybody's involvement in the PTA. It really is important for the community.
Ready? Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Center Merchants Board of Education approves the Center Merchants varsity cross country team to attend the Brown University's Northeast Championship XC Invitational in Warwick, Rhode Island on October 17th, 2014 and October 18th, 2014 at no cost to the district.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Center Merchants Board of Education approves the Center Merchants DECA Club to go to Six Flags Great Adventure, New Jersey on May 30th, 2015 at no cost to the district.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes. Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the recommendations of the Committee on Special Education for the months of May, June, August, and September for the 2014-2015 school year.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following individuals for the various 2014-2015 committees.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Do we have a aggregate kind of list for each of the committees on the website?
Not on the website. We didn't, unless you want us to put people's names on there.
No, probably not, right? Do we have a list, though, somewhere?
I emailed all the board.
And do we have like initial meetings for each of the committees occurred?
Each board member has been given an email, and the request for me for each board member is to organize the first meeting. At that point in time, you'll pick a chairperson, and you'll give us all the meetings for the year.
Okay. Great. And when is it typically done? Is it typically in the next month the first meeting occurs?
Sue Kelly reached out to me, but for me, I told her I just started a new job on Monday, so I need to get my schedule first before I could commit to a date. I didn't want to have to change it for the elementary committee, the curriculum committee. Okay. So I told her I'd get back to her at the end of this week or the beginning of next week on Monday.
Okay.
But yeah, they should definitely start within the next month.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Next 2 weeks.
Great.
Be it resolved, the Board of Education accepts the revised rubric for the evaluation of the superintendent of schools.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Great. Discussion. What's the revision again?
So I think it was the revisions that we discussed last time, which was the addition of The special ed was in the rubric that we looked at. It was the graduation rates. When we put it together, we missed that it was supposed to be in the rubric, right? That was the only addition?
No. Yes. And also it was added the percentages, negative and positive, towards all the regents exam at the secondary campus. That also was on that. And you're right, advanced regent diplomas as well as the regents rate was left off. So we added two new things in a sense. At the wording, and then one that we thought we were going to put on.
And the percentages we had discussed, where there was a kind of a hard tie-in to the numbers, and an issue was raised that, well, you know, hey, if the number is extremely high percentage already, and it's escaping me, was it living environment? It was 97.
U.S. history.
And U.S. history were extremely high numbers. What is superior performance if it's a 97% already? How does that work? And mm-hmm. and those were the kind of
adjustments
okay. that were made to that. Do we have a motion? Do we have a motion?
We have the motion and a second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the transportation request submitted by Family Deacon.
Motion. Second.
Second.
Is there any additional cost to the district for this?
No, there isn't.
Okay. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education conducts a third reading of the following policy and subsequently moves to adopt the policy.
Motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. That brings us to the general discussion portion of our meeting, and we're going to try to limit the general discussion going forward to the kind of two topics that we've got, and then after that we have a general kind of questions and comments from the community. The two topics that we've got tonight for general discussion are hiring policy and facilities. So on the hiring policy, I wanted to talk through, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the need to amend the hiring policy that we've got in place to address issues that have kind of come up over the years. And I've looked at a variety of policies and regulations from neighboring districts and kind of started to put together what I view to be an all-encompassing policy. But I ask, you know, for purposes of the discussion, the board members, to kind of bring to my attention the issues that they've seen and they feel a need to address so that I can kind of make sure that we get them in at least the first draft. And no policy has yet been distributed among us at all. It's just something that we're literally just starting to talk about.
So are we talking about regulations or policy, like as far as
the whole thing? Okay. What are the issues that you want to have addressed in kind of the modification of how we interview, where we post, how we
Right, so we'll start with screening. Really, a form that there's a vacancy, whether that's through, you know, a retirement or a need to fill a new position. And then how do we advertise for that position? And one of the major ways that most school districts advertise is OLAS, capital O, capital L, capital A, capital S.
Which is how I believe we already do.
Okay,
that's in
right.
place.
Yeah. But
that's
good. But just to get it in there. And then I think what my recommendation would be was for the Board of Education to understand how many applicants we had, because OLAS has the ability to narrow the search. So if you're looking for, we'll just use the example, elementary certified teachers, we would have a general understanding of even how many people applied.
So you're saying you want to report out to the board of these are the number of people that applied?
Correct.
Okay.
On any positions that we have, just so we can really for data purposes, you know, because if we're not drawing enough candidates, then we need to examine why. We wouldn't know that unless we're really looking at how many people are applying. And that's a good way for us to, you know, come up with
maybe either valid reasons or not valid reasons as to if we're doing enough to advertise or if the position was posted correctly. Did it have enough descriptors on it? You know, which I think sometimes, you know, people look at certain descriptions and they may not really know what the position is, you know, sometimes.
Clear set of requirements and a separate section for the nice-to-haves. If we can get it, let's go for it.
I don't understand, Gary.
Like additional certifications?
Any job posting should say we need X years of experience if we're looking for someone experienced in whatever we want that experience in. And then if we would like additional, like we like to go for the triple cert if possible. So that would be a nice to have. You know, we would also like, you know, if you have this, this is a plus.
So, Gene, what are the requirements there under the law? I know in certain instances if you go out and you say we need X, you know, you can't then take less than X. Is that, am I thinking of something different?
Well, the question, I guess, is whether, first of all,
whether the nice to haves are a requirement.
Well, preferable, right, the term?
I think we get to some problems that we have to look at from a legal point of view, is if these are either civil service positions or positions within a collective bargaining unit, because there may be implications then. In other words, in civil service, there are titles with requirements, et cetera, where you do have some flexibility, but not that much flexibility. So that's one thing. So you can't just put up requirements willy-nilly. You'd have to look at that carefully. And then, you know, with your professional contract, you'd have to see if there's any provision for that. Usually it is not for hire. I mean, usually you're pretty free to hire whoever you wish, but, you know, so long as it's within the right tenure areas, you can put second language preferable, that those kind of things are okay.
But if you go out and you say 5 years of experience teaching fifth grade English, you then cannot hire someone that has 4 years of experience teaching fifth grade English. Is that accurate?
No, it's not accurate unless there's something in the CBA that says that there must be some sort of posting or whatever.
Okay.
No, you can go for the best candidate that applies.
Yeah, absolutely. But it looks a little bit unethical the way I see it. Right now, if you go on Oz, we do use all Oz, and if anybody were to go online right now and see the jobs, you'll see some that say preferred.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, preferred literacy, right. K-12, things of that nature. So we don't mandate something because then it would preclude somebody from just applying. Maybe had some other specialty that we didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't think there's anything illegal unless it's something in the collective bargaining agreement, which I don't think there is.
Okay. Any other things that
I also think, Josh, anything that's posted on all of us, we talked about this in the past, is we need to add a tab on our website for employment.
Mm-hmm. We have that.
Could you tell me where it is? Because I haven't seen it.
It's under employment, right on the front. I'll show you.
Okay.
Okay.
And is that, and so when we post something, we also put it on the web?
Correct.
What about committees, though, Kristen? Is there anything with regard to hiring committees that you want to be standardized?
Well, I think, you know, and that's just in speaking with other board members, you know, in the surrounding areas, I think that what would be helpful for us, like as, you know, because I've said it before, I just always want to make sure that I've done my due diligence, just how we went over this report, no different. So for every candidate that, you know, our superintendent and his administration are going to be recommending, I would highly recommend, you know, the top cover sheet, which is only distributed to us, with basically what they tallied so that you have uniformity. So if there's questions, that everyone was asked the same questions and that they were tallied. So when I say the top cover sheet, we'll just say five people were interviewed. So each of those people would be listed. The people that were on the committee would be listed with the scores that each of those candidates received. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the person with the highest score gets the job. It just means that we've done our due diligence, and heaven forbid, because it's, again, our role as board members is to always protect, you know, ourselves from litigation. Is heaven forbid someone declared that things were improper or they felt they were discriminated against. It's always stuff that you can fall back on. Depending on the policy, most districts keep paperwork until someone is tenured sometimes or 3 years or, I mean, maybe Gene can speak to that more. I've seen different districts hold paperwork for different lengths of time than it can be shredded, you know, what the committee's notes were. But I think supplying the board with, you know, how the person wrote, you know, if it's a teacher, we'll just say, or an administrator, many times they're asked to do a writing sample. And as we know from our constituent members, meaning our parents, writing is extremely important. Someone may interview very well, but if they can't articulate their thoughts on paper and they spell things incorrectly, et cetera, then our administration's also going to hear about that, that, you know, so-and-so sent a letter home and they can't spell. So I think just, you know, again, just making sure, you know, that we interview properly, that we tally the scores, that we have a standard writing samples, whatever the administration wants to make up for each different area.
What about committee composition?
Can I ask this? Committees for what type of employees, what level?
So the way that I would envision it would be there would be a separate structure for, you know, you're going to have teachers. There would be a structure. How do you hire teachers? Do you need to have TAs and paras? And
my only cautionary note, and I could talk about it because it was in Newsday, in Brentwood recently they had a committee for the search for the assistant superintendent, and the committee made a recommendation, and when the board did not appoint that person, the board was roundly criticized and actually attacked publicly, and was in Newsday. Mm-hmm. So I think if you have any sort of committee structure, you have to make it perfectly clear that it's advisory, that it is the non-delegable duty of the superintendent of schools in the first instance and the Board of Education to make a recommendation and the Board of Education to either accept or reject that recommendation. Because otherwise, and the committee structure, if so complicated, people say, you know, I invested hours and hours and hours doing this and now you're disregarding my recommendation. Mm-hmm. That alienates the community rather than unifies them.
Do you have a form hiring policy with regulations that?
I didn't know this was going on tonight. I think I did circulate some samples from New York State School Boards Association and at least two of my other districts, but I'll be happy to recirculate those.
Great. Any other things that you've seen, Tom or Wendy, over your terms here that you'd like to see better addressed?
And then the only thing I would add in addition to that is even when someone does leave Centerbridge is that we have an exit interview, you know, as to why they exited the Centerbridge School District. And it could be for very great reasons. They moved on to, you know, be an administrator in another school district. I mean, that's all fine. But again, that's just good feedback for us because we really do want to retain our staff. You know, that's very important to provide consistency to our children.
Sure. May I make one more comment? The other thing I'll circulate to the board, the state, New York State Human Rights Commission has a sort of column A, column B, permissible questions
asked
in pre-employment. And I'm sure your personnel people know this, but inadvertently, if you have a committee and someone says to an applicant, what year did you graduate from college? That may seem like an innocent question or they may be thinking, you know, my uncle went to that university and graduated in 82, but that is an impermissible question because it's indirectly revelatory of someone's age, which cannot be asked at the pre-employment stage.
So do we train to that, the people that we have interview?
That would be part of the regulations.
But what do we do now? Do we train to that, or how do we convey? I mean, you know, I might not know that if I'm...
I pass them out, like in districts I've been. I don't know what they do here. Yeah, they might pass them out.
We do.
Many, if not all of us, have been trained at some point in time. And yours truly has actually trained me. But, yeah, we do.
What
and then we distribute.
Especially if you have lay people involved, people may just ask students, what does your spouse do? Impermissible question.
We do distribute questions. Because we want every candidate being asked the same questions. It doesn't mean that you can't go off their resume or follow-up questions to what they say, because legally you're allowed to do that. We do have exit interviews, which is great. I think it's wonderful to have on there.
So I think if we had some training deck on an annual basis or certification, it helps you in that litigation when someone sues and say, well, we've trained to it. They might have asked, but we've done our...
We certainly didn't condone it. It was an inadvertent blurting out.
No. And you had recommended it for this year for everybody at the staff conference day. We were looking at, Mara and I would discuss this for our next camp conference day. I don't know if you remember, this is in July. You had said to have that done, the do's and don'ts, you called them. It was a good idea. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do that in the next... the conference day, so everybody does it together. Although we've all
I think there were like a bunch of different topics, whether it was the hiring and other, you know.
Yeah, you were calling it do's and don'ts, which I thought was good. So they said they were going to do it the next conference day.
So it just needs to be added to the regulations, Joss. It's really just a check-off point because, again, it's just a good reminder. You know, for, say, the typically the secretarial will put together folders for each candidate, and that would be where the paperwork would be provided, and perhaps the facilitator of the committee would say, I'm going to distribute right now questions that are illegal and legal to ask. Let's please review them, because especially when you have community members or maybe a union rep that hasn't been on a lot of committees before, it's always just a good idea to refresh everybody's memory, even if they've been on a committee 1,000 times, because inevitably there's somebody on there that hasn't been on one time or another.
True. That's
so
a good
it's
point.
Just a good, you know, it's like anything. It's a process, and that's really what we're talking about. If we always have a consistent process, then we can always say we do the same thing for the most part every single time. And that way, if we need to tweak it, and if the administration finds that there's areas where we can grow and they can give us feedback, and we can add to that,
that's great.
You know, make it better. It's really more of a reflective, this is a good start, and then I think they need to own it and then get back to their superintendent and reflect upon it and say, you know what, there's areas of growth X, Y, and Z, or this doesn't work, and this works really well.
Okay. So I'm going to look at what we have and try and kind of put something together. I don't know if I can commit to have it done by October 1st to have another discussion, but it will be on the agenda again, certainly in this next 2 months.
Give me a line about an emergency situation, because every once in a while you're going to have a situation where you need somebody immediately, so you do have your policy.
There's policies that, in the form policies, that specifically address that. The emergency situation
yeah.
I've got.
We
yep.
get that. And at the end of August, all of a sudden something happens. We need somebody with a
you mean the day before school?
Yeah. Or at the end, a week left of you know, an AP physics course, and you need somebody who's, you know, it's hard to
absolutely
go through a process.
And these days, you got to go through the whole fingerprinting. And if they're not
correct.
Clear, there's an emergency.
Oh, yeah. Add that, Josh. Just while you're fingerprinting.
There's a whole process for, you know,
uh-huh. I think that we have that as part of our current process.
We have all of this in our procedures and process that I have here. We have every one of those things. But you're trying to clearly put it, and you talked about a policy, which is different than a regulation.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to kind of separate.
So I view it as policy, and then regs fall under the policy as to how we implement it.
Correct. And regs can either be put with the Board of Education policy book, or it could be kept like this, where Judy Ponticello has the process in her office. And right now, this school district doesn't have regulations. Really, there's a couple, I think, recently, but not many. But it's another way of doing it. So I think your policy, I gave you William Floyd's, I gave you Eastport South Manor, I gave you East Ridges, and if you notice very quickly, their policy was extremely
detailed.
They're all very, very similar in general.
The regulations
are. It was not at all, in fact, non-existent to some extent. Ours, in fact, the policies you have a lot of policies in this district about, you know, the sexual harassment, all those things before you hire somebody. So you actually have them. I think you're looking to kind of put them all together and then add a few things. And then I think you're looking more closely at regulations than anything. The things that I'm hearing are regulations or the procedures to do it.
Can you have a copy of this made from
most places? Most places have a policy, which is a general statement of the board's mission. So employment.
You have that now.
The district, the district strives to hire the best qualified candidates, regardless of race, color, creed. Well, I was making this up.
That's about what they say, Gene.
Okay, doing this, we have a process that should be blah, 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 in accordance with law. And then you have the details of that in a regulation right behind it.
Okay.
And that's where we need to.
I just think, and, you know, Josh, just so you know, the reason that I find that it's so important, even when you have new administration, administrators typically, when they come into a district, don't really know how the district runs because every district is a little bit different. So it's a good guide for them. Or if an administrator is not here and you have a sub-administrator for some reason, you know, someone goes out on maternity or someone's injured, it still is always a guide. I know, you know, when I went to William Floyd, I was really happy that everything was written out. Everything was spelled out. So I could always read it, and then if I had additional questions, I could ask, but it was there.
One of the things that I saw in kind of my process to go through is when it's also that information is easily accessible to the public. I could see somebody that's interviewing saying, oh, what's the process?
Mm-hmm.
And it may, you know, so e-board docs brings me back around. There were a couple districts that had it, a couple districts that had their policy there and their regs. Some just had their policies. Just an interesting, that's something that we talked about at the last meeting, and we're kind of looking at e-board docs as a software platform that you can have the meeting agendas on and all the backup contracts as well as the district policies. And So, okay. So let's end that. The next topic was the facilities. I know Art Gerhauser is here, who's the chair of the facilities committee. We've kind of had a lot of discussions over the last year. We've had walkthroughs. We've worked with the architects, Grillo and Associates. Is it Grillo and Associates?
John Grillo.
I wanted to kind of, and we discussed it before with the board, and I don't have a real clear view on where everybody is, and I thought that it would be a good thing to discuss again. I don't know if everybody's kind of familiar with the facilities packet. I think you are, and we've had it around. It involved significant work at the elementary school, renovation work, expansion of some of the smaller rooms, as well as kind of true, I wouldn't call maintenance, but required work to things like the bathrooms, ceilings where there's no access above, where, you know,
windows that didn't open.
I included certain things like doors. At the high school, the majority of the work was the addition of 7 classrooms, 4 science rooms, 2 home ec rooms, and an art room. Where did I flip the last 3?
No, it was 4 science, 1 technology, 1 art, 1 home career.
Okay.
Tentatively.
Okay.
Right. Where the space was initially allocated.
Right. And as well as renovation of the existing science rooms, new roof.
I was going to say 2 big points at the elementary school, roof replacement.
For the entire school, and there's significant areas where there's leakage.
Yeah. The one cropped up this week, actually, and also septic system.
Septic.
Which is a big one.
We kind of refreshed it in the last 2 months or a month and a half to highlight and address some issues that have cropped up here, both roof section and an air conditioning section for the auditorium. And I wanted to just kind of hear from the board what the thoughts are, whether there's other things that the board thinks should be added and discussed. And then I think the next step would be to, with the board's viewpoint, take it back and have one final meeting of the facilities committee, take that into account with a final presentation. So I don't know, you know, Wendy, I know that you and I circulated the document. Do you have any, Kristen, anybody have thoughts, Gary?
I don't have anything that I think really needs added, Josh. I mean, it's been going over, you know, numerous times.
No, does Tom have any? I mean, I've looked at it so many times.
No, I'd be happy with the committee's proposal.
Yeah, as it stands now.
You're happy with the proposal as it stands now? I mean, I'd like to just talk about it with the board. I had a thought and kind of in taking the pulse of different members of the community that weren't necessarily on the committee last year but have volunteered to be on the committee this year. You know, in we believe, I think, as a facilities committee, that the large majority of the work is required. For a variety of reasons, not necessarily for growth, but for maintenance, you know, leaky roof just like you do at your house, for, you know, pipes that are broken in bathrooms that haven't been, how long, 30 years, 40 years?
For the most part.
Yeah. As well as to stay kind of cutting edge in science, you know, and kind of ties in with everything that we've done with the goals, is saying we want to be the top district on Long Island. We want to put out kids that are ready to compete everywhere and anywhere. You need facilities for that too, and you need facilities that properly, you know, house students from a size perspective. You need facilities that are up to date and cutting edge from a science perspective. So I think that those things are important, and I also believe that, you know, one of the very important things, and you kind of turn to the health and wellness committee, is our sports, and I think that I feel comfortable with the numbers and the work scope that the facilities committee has put up. And I was also a part of the facilities committee before I was on the board, and I'm still a part of the facilities committee. I think that the work is all real work that is helpful. I think that I don't know kind of where it plays out from a community perspective, who will come out and vote yes mm-hmm. for that. And I think what I've heard from various members of the community is that they would be more supportive if there were changes that helped to promote athletics as well. And, you know, I want to talk through with the board and then, you know, back to the facilities committee. One of the initial topics that the facilities committee looked at was a transition of the current football field to a turf field, which would allow increased usage. And the increased usage would be, I guess now, because it's a grass field, if it were used on a seven-day-a-week basis, it would beat up the field and it wouldn't be in proper form for a game. Mm-hmm. Certainly, in rainy days, you can't use it because it tears up the field. One of the proposals was to basically remove that field, turn it into a multi-purpose field so that it could be used by JV, and it could be used on varsity for practices. It could be used for lacrosse practices, not just the final. And I think that, you know, listen to that, and that there's certainly a cost that's attendant to that, and there's people that have different viewpoints as to whether it's nicer to play on grass and turf, and, you know, I don't know. I don't really have a viewpoint on that other than what I've heard, which is you can really maximize your usage. So what are the – does the board have any viewpoints on that and whether that should be something we should go back and
ask? I think I've been doing so much research on both ways that I really don't have an opinion. Mm-hmm. Like one set, I would almost be more curious, and we had spoken about even sending out a survey – too, like just using SurveyMonkey, free. Maybe just putting on our website.
Just on the field aspect of it?
If you want to just focus in on sports, like you're saying right mm-hmm. now, to see if that was something that should be brought up to the facilities committee. I don't really know. I get people that say yes and people that say no. It's so equally distributed.
So I view it as that's kind of something that the facilities committee does. It's made up of the community, and anybody can join that committee and mm-hmm. come out, and we'd love to have more people come out and join. But is that, if the facilities committee made that recommendation that we believe that this would be a good add, is that something that you as board members would support?
I would support it. I mean, I know some school districts, I remember when Sag Harbor was putting on their turf field, they actually had a bus and they went to a neighboring school district. So people could actually walk on it, see if, I think a lot of people just, if they don't know it, they don't know it. It's mm-hmm. more of a, you know, if it's something that, because people hear things. Or perhaps that we need to provide the research, the pros and the cons, and let people make an informed decision, because sometimes I hear things that aren't exactly accurate or true on both ends. You know, I always feel if you give people the correct information and they come to their own end, then they support whatever it is that it may be. So maybe that's where we just need to do more diligence as far as putting together just information, you know, different websites where they can access it and then form their own opinion.
I'm trying to understand what you're saying. So are you saying form their own opinion for purposes of whether we include it or form their own opinion for purposes of whether they vote yes or no?
Whether they vote yes or no on the turf fields.
Okay.
You know, I know that I wouldn't want to, I think my only fear would be, my reservation is, because some people did say this, that they would vote the entire bond down if that was on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be respectful of that and, you know, just say, okay, well, if that would throw everything out,
mm-hmm.
that would really sadden me and it would hurt our children.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to be respectful of that because we did hear that many times. And that's why I said maybe to ask that as a survey, if there was enough people that were encouraged and said, yes, we really believe this is a good thing to do, then we should add it to the bond, or do we make it separate?
We did have discussions about that would be the B when we were talking A and
right,
B list. It's the only thing I would want pulled out. I wasn't in favor of the A and B list overall, but I've never really been in favor of a turf field. I've heard there are more injuries. Kristen is right there. The studies show different things. It's an extremely difficult thing to find hard and fast information on one side or the other, although I have heard more injuries, I've heard different things. Plus, it doesn't last as long as I thought. Like, there's an incurring cost that I wasn't aware of either. Initially, we were told that grass is more expensive because of the upkeep, but then a turf field isn't, like, put in and that's the end of it. It doesn't last for that long, and it's a really big part of the cost, putting it back in. And
On the injury point, can I ask Mr. Thode, not tonight, because you're, you know, but at some point, perhaps you can come to the Facilities Committee or give us a little data on your thoughts on, I mean, this is your specialty on the, the pluses, minuses, and the injuries. I'm not, I don't want to put you on the spot tonight, but at some point, you know. So give it to us now.
Well, there's a few different pieces because I did have the experience in my past life of putting a turf field.
Can you, I'm sorry, just because we're taping, you mind coming up?
We want to hear what you have to say. Yeah. Thanks, Jeremy.
My wife doesn't, so it's always nice to be able to talk. Was that in the video? Oh, was that recorded?
That's out there now.
All right.
It's okay.
I'll admit to it. I have put in a turf field in my past life, so I was from a grass to a turf field. So I do have that experience. I think there are pluses and minuses. I will tell you that the ability for a community to use a turf field for multiple teams has, in my experience, been appreciated. So that's one
community
piece.
Usage, meaning not necessarily school teams, but also
correct. Yeah,
so
I mean that would be a district.
Be.
That would be a district by district decision.
Right.
But
just like we allow teams to use our grass field, you're saying
correct.
You could,
you could have Santa Merch's soccer tournament and utilize those fields. You can do it with lights and turf and not wear and tear and so forth and so on. You have that advantage, and that's been successful in a lot of districts that I've either been involved with or I know of. So that's one piece. There is conflicting information regarding cost. You know, you do talk about the cost of lining a field and watering a field and so forth and so on. And there is that cost after, you know, can go from anywhere from 10 to 15 years where you may have to redo the surface of a turf field.
It seems like that's something we should be able to get our arms around pretty tightly, grass cost to maintain versus, right? I would think.
Well, the missing piece is often overlooked is the man hours. Our facilities people can be working on other things, fixing other things, putting their attention to something else. So that's a huge advantage. Injury-wise, I have never seen in any of my, you know, experience with this, and I could certainly do more for you, a significant difference either way. If you have a beat-up field like we do sometimes after a football game or whatever else, and there's big divots in there, and a girls' soccer or a boys' soccer team is running on there, that's not a true surface. A turf field is a true surface.
My daughter broke her foot on that, so I'm well aware of that experience.
Exactly. So you know, those types of things, you know, are advantages, in my opinion.
Do you need special machinery to keep the turf up, Jeremy?
There is, depending on what you want to do, you can get a deal where you get it and you pull it behind a golf cart. You can do it yourself. Sometimes you pay a maintenance fee to do that. It's up to you. It's not significant either way. It doesn't have to be done as all, you know, it basically the grass starts to settle flat down, so you want it to stand up looking like grass.
And things also change. You have to be careful because we have Relay for Life here.
Mm-hmm.
Things are like that. If you ever go graduation outside, you want to know what you can do and not do because it also affects the community in those areas on what you can actually put into the ground and turf. Big difference.
Okay.
So for Relay for Life, which is huge to many of you, you'd want to be listening to this conversation about whether you go to a turf field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how you make that's what you had for tents or whatever you would use sandbags instead of staking. Yeah. Right, for the Relay for Life.
So what would your, I mean, I've heard what you said, positive and negatives to both. Where do you think it nets out for the district?
For the district?
Put aside the dollars, what would you rather have, a beautiful grass field or a turf field?
For the community, I would rather have a turf field. But with that, and I don't know what the existing plan is, but and I don't know if I'm out of turn saying this, but the other issue is the track. Replacing, right. Repairing that track.
That's no matter what.
That would be a priority over.
But that's I think that's part of it gets fixed.
I didn't know if
that.
I didn't know if that was in.
One and the same. In the same.
You want to do the. You want to do the.
Either
if you're
going
to do it, you want to do it together. You want to do the turf first.
Right, but either way, it happens, right? Is the point in the existing plan? The track gets fixed.
Has always been part of the contract.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So this is the adder, but to your point, now you're not driving trucks over a new track. You.
Yeah.
What about our bleachers? Do you feel like if you put a new turf field in there, would you suggest new bleachers as well? Or do you think it would suffice with what we have right now?
If you have open check, I would say yes. But
I'm just curious.
I think what we have
usually
right now
goes line to line. Ours doesn't. right now. I'm not saying do that.
You know, I think based on the school district size and my experience thus far with homecoming and so forth, I think right now the existing bleachers are fine.
That's good.
You could always do something a little bigger on the opposite side to add seats, which wouldn't be costly if that's something you wanted to do, or bring in something. I wouldn't, you know, I don't think that's a necessity, to be honest.
Another issue that did come up at a more recent board meeting was the Knights of Columbus. If we did lose that field, there would be
a significant impact.
Right, and so then the use of a turf field, like that is factoring into my thinking as far as that too, because if we do lose that field, that would, you know, if it sells or whatever happens with that Knights of Columbus, we'll have to consider that as well. And the turf field then would allow for more usage.
So you're saying if we lost the usage there,
this would compensate it.
Could compensate for it.
As in my thoughts of where I'm going with this. I still think breaking it out by itself might be helpful. That's my suggestion.
What do you think, Tom? About the turf field and versus leaving it as grass and not including it?
I like the turf field. I think it gives us a lot of usage. And happy to hear the athletic director slash everything else say the same thing, means that the sports guys will appreciate it. I believe the numbers on I thought the numbers financially worked in our favor. As far as by the time it was able, I thought the large portion of the money was the infrastructure, the drainage and such. You know, that redo in 9 to 10 years wasn't that big a number.
I think a redo is about $100,000. That's my back of the napkin.
You spent a lot of your money on the infrastructure.
Yeah. And I think when we looked at it, about grass and cutting over 10 years versus the redo at about 100, you're netting out close enough that it's just not.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's hard to come up with sometimes.
The other thing, just another opportunity. Another possibility when you do that is being able to charge outside groups, not necessarily our community, but outside groups to use that field and lights and such as Section 11 or something like that. So.
Okay,
thank
you very much. Ms. Gerhauser, do you have anything you want to state, or should we just take it back to the Facilities Committee and talk about it?
I have a question.
Sure.
I'm taking you home.
Right now I'm just lacking clarity on direction, okay? Originally, our recommendation, the official recommendation, was $18 million. The Facilities Committee subsequently met, and we added on to our recommendation, although we haven't formally presented it, the roofing above where we are now, the roofing down the corridor, and the HVAC for the auditorium. I think that was about another $1.2 million.
No,
the
total, I believe, was a little over half.
No, I think the AC had to be $350 million,
John,
right?
Because there was
The AC itself was $350, so you're starting from that, John, and then moving on to that roof. But it's somewhere in between what you two are saying, I believe.
Okay. The last board gave us kind of direction, the impression to stay around $18 million. And I think, Carol, we arrived at that because we had an opinion that we wanted to stay under $200 on a tax increase for the general household. And that's how we worked down to $18 million, worked our $34 million wish list down to $18 million. So I guess what I'm asking is if, Josh, you don't have to give it to me right now, but before we meet or to bring to the committee meeting, if you have a dollar suggestion, you know, some direction, to please provide it. And we'll try to work in that. We may also make a second recommendation on work we believe should be done. But if you have a dollar figure,
we'll make
a recommendation in that direction.
No, I think this is the forum to talk about it. But for my personal thinking, that $18 million number, for a variety of reasons, when you look at the percentages and when you look at the absolute dollars per household or...
Mm-hmm.
That kind of feels like the right number. If you came back and it was $18,200,000 because we really did. Okay, but that to me, you know, feels like the right number. I don't know.
And how much is the turf field? $1 million.
I think turf's about $1 million.
I think it was $900,000, $250,000 for the track, $900,000 for the turf field. Is that about right? Mr. Allen, did you have a cost on the additional roofing and AC?
Yes, I did. Yeah, there's three sections of roof. The athletic corridor, underneath all the ductwork, off the air conditioning units up there, the main lobby, the media center here, and the air conditioning in the auditorium is $600,000.
Okay, so that puts us at about 18.6.
Correct.
With a turf field becoming about 19.5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Art.
So that brings us to the next point, which is general questions and comments from the community for items not on the agenda. Again, because we're recording, if you've got one, come up to the podium, please. Does anybody have any questions? Yes.
Mine's actually regarding tonight's agenda. I'm sorry I was late. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay.
Just because we're recording, what's your name?
My name is Elizabeth Von Hassel. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm a community member, and I have a daughter in the high school. I had a question about fiscal section item 9, contracts, exhibit 2. Was that approved? Okay, unanimously? Unanimously?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, would you be so kind, since that exhibit isn't provided, could someone please read exhibit 2? And I'm specifically curious about the specifics of CMTA Appendix H.
So CMTA Appendix H was a an amendment to the Center Merchants Teachers contract that it authorizes. It doesn't put anybody in place, but it authorizes a transitional coordinator to be put in place. For an annual stipend of $5,000.
Okay.
That's ultimately determined and approved. So what would happen, the board would later come back and, Mr. Stewart would make a recommendation to the board. We want to put this person in place. Stipend's $5,000. I recommend it, and the board will make a determination at that point. But to get to that point, this amendment had to be put in place. And the transitional coordinator works. You can better explain.
Yeah, actually, Ricardo could. But it's it's an MOA. It's a memorandum of agreement.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going to change something in a contract, in a collective bargaining agreement of a contract, which just happens to be the teacher's contract, if you're going to give a stipend for an extra team, an extra club, and I think you're probably going to talk about that. That's my guess. You have to have an MOA first.
Okay.
So that's what this is. This is an MOA for a transitional coordinator, which has to do with the special education department, not extracurricular.
Okay, so that is not for a club?
It is not for a club.
Okay. No. Were there any clubs approved in this agenda?
No.
Okay. All right, thank you. I think that's my only question pertains to that section. Can I ask another question unless someone else has one?
Just, you're here. Yeah, sure.
Okay. I wanted to know if there are any current procedures or criteria in place for approving or cutting clubs in the high school. Do we have any kind of criteria?
Right now, what's happened over the years, and this is why you see a lot of these MOAs, because you'll have groups that want to have a club, and they say, well, we want to add a debate club. We watched that about 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Debate club came, and every year the principals, actually, they get an exit interview with all of the advisors on what happened throughout the year. How many members did you have? How many times did you meet? How much money did you collect? What did you do for the community? And so on. When they get those in their hands, then the following year, they get a certain amount of money allotted by the board. So far, the last since I've been here, they've had the same amount of money to hold the same amount of clubs. We haven't really increased or decreased clubs. But at the end of the year, if they find one club that's not usually on membership a lot, where they find a club has, if the Bible club only has 2 people going to the every meeting, and all of a sudden you have a debate club and they have 25 students who say, boy, we'd want to be, part of this club, but you don't have it, then it's at pretty much the principal's discretion of whether or not they recommend to add a club and take out a club. They haven't had the ability just to add clubs since I've been here. New clubs have come in. I know that the debate club has come in. The Bible club has come in. And then debate's now out, right? Did they go in? It was here for 2 years, and then it went out. So they come and go. But it's basically on those reports that come back.
Basically mostly on attendance-based or active membership-based.
Yeah, I would say that.
Okay, so there's records kept of that.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And is there there's no line item budget for stipends for clubs. It's just one budget, and the stipends come out of
the
that budget.
The stipends are in the collective bargaining agreement of the CMTA, the teacher's contract. That's where the stipends are agreed upon, and you can see that if you want. I'll show you the contract. But that's where they are. During the budget cycle, you're going to watch the board here. During the budget cycle, as they look at money, you might have somebody come up and say, look, I have a feeling you have great clubs, but we need more. All the clubs are very successful, but do we have a couple more we want to add? And then when they go through the budget cycle, whether or not they want to add money into it, they have the ability to do that. Or if they feel, no, we have to tighten up the belt and take away one or two clubs. That happens at times, too.
Okay, and just to be clear, so the actual list of approved activities or approved clubs, how is that determined? What is an approved club?
If you look, right now the collective bargaining agreement has, just say, 25 clubs that are already in there. Mm-hmm. Approved by the board, they're in the contract.
So clubs are approved by the board?
Correct.
Okay.
To be a club doesn't mean that they're going to happen. Right now we have a list of 25, and maybe we have 10 that run right now because 10 are only funded.
Okay.
Approving it is almost like what we did tonight. You watched the board approve the transition counselor. Doesn't mean we have a transition counselor, but it gives us the ability as a school district,
if one comes up,
to post a job,
okay,
recommend somebody if the board so wishes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments?
Hi, Jeanette Lopez. Section 8 for the appointments. Margaret Romaine, the chemistry teacher, it says that it's adjusted. Is this a probationary position?
That is adjusted. Margaret Romaine has already been appointed. If you look, she's appointed at a past meeting, which was probably about a month ago. So
okay,
it's not a new appointment, but it has been adjusted because what happens when we hire people, many times they come forth and say, by the way, I have my master's degree, or I have an extra 15 credits. And then
gotcha.
Once they do that, we adjust it to the appropriate. Right now, she's an E1. So she was already hired. It's not a new position. She was there for a retirement of Mr. Botkin, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong. And that's why she was hired last month. But now we have her on there again. It's just because we had to adjust her salary.
So last month was, I probably did not see that. Was she listed as a probationary then?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. And another question is, do we have a school quality review team?
I don't know the answer. I think maybe Mr. Summer could answer, but I can get back to you and find out about that. Or Mr. Allen, we can get back to you on that.
We do not? No. And do we have a school improvement focus team?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, I'm asking because on our website, for the parental involvement policy, it lists some of these involvement teams that we could be on, and those are two of them that I, they stood out to me, and I've never heard of them, so that's why I'm asking.
Okay.
So we'll look at that, and we'll get back to you at the October 1st
or
meeting. Right?
Or, on the
or before, yeah.
Okay.
If we can, we'll send, maybe you can send your email, and we'll send you an email.
Okay, great. Thanks, Josh.
Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Lisa Marin, I was just wondering, when is the audio going to be put up on the website? I know you were going to check the quality from last.
I don't know.
Paying babysitter.
It was very
I listened to the quality of the last one, and did we put it up?
No, we decided not to put it up. We sent an email to the board because the concern was that the council had made a recommendation at our last meeting, and I was nervous about whether or not the legalities of it and whether or not we were just going to post it. In addition, there was a concern because there was not that mic last time. So people did ask questions, and we could not hear them. So the question was whether we give one that wasn't fully, you know, the ability of people to hear it. My main concern, though, is just to make sure, and this is a great time to do it, to make sure that we can post it and there's nothing we have to say to the crowd beforehand and things of that nature before people actually come up to the mic. So whatever you say, I'm good to go.
Okay. Well, there's no legal requirement to either tape or not to tape. The only legal requirement is to have minutes taken of the board action. Many districts, though, these days are either audio and or videotaping, and that also is perfectly legal. It's also perfectly legal for members of the audience to tape either audio or video, so long as the taping does not intrude upon the, you know, if you have a bright light right here in someone's eye or something. Oh, I'm sorry. Then you could ask for, you know, certain, like, I know places have a certain area, but we have that here too.
Yeah.
So are we good to, we're recording, we have names, are we good to post?
Yes, you are. What some places do, though, and I think it's a good practice, although not legally required, is they tell the audience that. But so everyone knows, because there's some people in this day and age may not want their child to be videotaped, some of them put it on YouTube. You know,
can we just have a sign posted, audio recording in progress?
Yes, you may.
Okay. So we will post this. Audio recording is in progress. If anybody's spoken that doesn't want, please let us know now. I already sent it to her. She's got it.
Okay, so good.
So good.
Okay.
I don't know. Is it, will we have it posted like the following week? How long does it take to go through the process?
I can download the file. It's always predicated by how much the tech staff is doing. I mean, we can make it a priority and try to have it up by.
I think we should try to get it up by the following week. You know, by the 7 day is a reasonable.
If the board's comfortable with the 7 day.
We turn around.
Let's start there.
Yeah.
The other thing is the taping, whether audio or video, is foilable.
Yeah.
Now, John, are we going to be able to put it on the web such that, you know, it's easier to do than the email you had sent with the sample, you know, where we had to download? And
well, what's going to ultimately happen is we do it as a link off the website. So when you go to the Board of Education page, where we currently list the agenda and the minutes, we will now put an icon there that says recording, and we'll have everything loaded in there. The reason why that was difficult, because we had to post it on our website, but it had to be password protected and controlled, so it wasn't open to the public.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else have any other questions?
Thank you, Pat.
Great. That brings us to the next item. The next Board of Educational meeting will be held on October 1 at 7:30 here in the library. I want to thank administration again for coming. I know you're not required to come. It's very helpful, like the question tonight on facilities. It's really appreciated. Thank you very much. Have a good night. And we'd like to make a motion to adjourn to executive session to discuss a specific employment matter with our lawyers. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries unanimously.
What?
No.
First, Gary goes to the bathroom.
Me too.